Welcome to the Autism Mom MD podcast, where we discuss empowerment, growth, and inclusion for individuals with autism. And now your host, Dr. Carol Baltazar.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. B. Welcome to the Autism Mom MD podcast. My guest today is Mike Sheila. When Mike learned in March 2008 that his three-year-old son Mikey was diagnosed with autism, it changed his life and the lives of every member of his family. Shortly after, Mike wanted to do something to contribute to the autism community, and he began a fundraiser. Because of his volunteer work, Mike was asked to join the board of directors with Pathfinders for Autism in January 2014. Since then, Mike has spoken on radio, television, and podcasts about the world of autism, his role as a dad, and ways the rest of the world can learn and support the autism community. Please join me in welcoming Mike Sheila. Hi, Mike.
Dr. B, thank you for having me on the show. This is going to be great.
Cool. I'm excited. So, well, let's start from the beginning. Can you share with us your story about getting Mikey's diagnosis and how you navigated getting the services he needed?
How much time do we have?
I know, right? We could talk days about stuff like this.
Mikey's story actually started that day he was born. And in addition to that, Mikey was a super premium.
Oh, okay.
He was due on July 7th, 2005. And my wife went into labor on April 5th, 2005. And then he was born on April 7th. And to this day, the doctors don't know what happened. He weighed 2 pounds, 1.5 ounces.
Oh,
he was born. Okay. He spent the first 3 months of his life in the NICU. And for any of you listening to this that have been through having a child in the NICU, particularly that small, that day that you get to bring him home is a celebration. You're like, whew, that's done. Now we can move on and have our normal life.
Right.
And because he was a super preemie, he had a developmental pediatrician from day one from Johns Hopkins that worked very closely with us. And we started noticing just little things, not reaching milestones, not talking. He would fixate, he would perseverate. He did a lot of things that we didn't know what to do about. And the funny thing about autism is nobody wants to tell you that your kid is autistic.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants. So they'll call it everything else. They'll call it PDD, NOS. They'll say, he'll catch up, or he has a speech delay. So we worked with infant and toddlers, and we went to a number of tests at Johns Hopkins, and the developmental pediatrician that he was working with ran a bunch of tests and said, look, if I gave these results to 10 different doctors, half of them would tell you your son has autism, half of them would tell you he doesn't.
Hmm.
So I don't know what to tell you. We're like, okay, so where does that leave us?
Right.
And at the time, Mikey was in the infant and toddlers program where we live in Westminster, Maryland, in Carroll County. She said, have the school do an assessment. And the school ran an assessment, and he wasn't just a little autistic. He was pretty high on the spectrum as far as different triggers and routines and all of that. So, again, that was right before, it was 2 days before, I think, his third birthday.
Okay.
And I have to give my wife a lot of credit for driving that, because we both knew that something was not right, but we didn't really know how to go about articulating. And my wife was reading a book at the time from a famous celebrity who had a son with autism. We were on vacation. We were making the 8-hour drive to take the family to the beach. And she's reading the book in the passenger seat while I'm driving. And every 15, 20 minutes, she'd read me a paragraph. She'd look at me and go, that's my.
Hmm.
And I said, are we thinking Mikey has autism? And she said, I think we have to ask. So it wasn't until we started asking and saying, does he have autism, that people with degrees and experience started to engage us. And even then, they were very reluctant to do it until the school conducted that series of tests.
Uh-huh.
And that was when we received his diagnosis. And I want to say, maybe 4 years later, we did a follow-up test at Hopkins. And forgive me, I forget the name of it. Again, if you're in this audience, you've probably had this test done as well. And we were told that Mikey is clinically intellectually disabled on top of his autism and on top of his ADHD. Mm. So he gets the trifecta for comorbidity.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And when you said he got tested at school, how early was that? How early can they start doing the testing?
He was in the pre-K program.
Okay.
So this was, yeah, he was just before his third birthday. So he was already working with the infant and toddlers program.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he started going to pre-K classes.
Okay.
In Carroll County Public School System.
So was there like a, when you were getting the evaluations, was there a long waiting period for it for you, or because he was already, you know, linked with different doctors because he was a preemie, was it, do you think it was expedited a little bit more quickly?
There were some things that were expedited, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
And there were other things that weren't. This particular test happened fairly quickly from our request to taking the test to getting the results was just a span of a couple of weeks. So it was fairly quick.
Oh, okay. So your wife was reading about autism or reading that book mm-hmm. written by the celebrity. Did you know much about autism or did you have any experience with autism before?
At that point, I was probably like the majority of people in the United States. You peripherally knew about it. The one thing that people seem to know is they'll talk about Rain Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was probably our generation's first introduction to autism, right?
Right, right. And I know because I have a son who has autism too. And, you know, it took a while to get his diagnosis because it was always like in the beginning when he was younger, it's, oh, he's a boy and boys mature later.
You don't want to say it.
Yeah.
They want to give you every other possible reason besides autism as if it's a death sentence.
Mm-hmm. And so how did you... Were you working at the time too? Or, I mean, you're juggling, trying to like figure out his diagnosis and trying to learn, educate yourself. I mean, it's a lot. You're basically teaching yourself about autism, right?
Yeah. My wife and I both work full time.
Uh-huh.
And we were very fortunate. In the autism community, you talk about having your circle of influence, the people that you can depend on. And sometimes mm-hmm. that's family, sometimes that's friends. But we had Mikey and his older sister, Taylor, in a public daycare. I'll leave their name out. They weren't the best in the world.
Mm-hmm.
They had a very high turnover rate in their caregivers. But there was a woman in that room who seemed to not only understand Mikey, but genuinely care for him. And I knew that the nature of that place was she'd be gone in a few months.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave her my business card one day and I said, look, if you ever need a reference, feel free to use me. I'd be happy to write one for you because you've shown more care and compassion for my son than anybody else. And I don't think 24 hours went by. And she contacted me and said, how would you feel about me working just for you?
Hmm. Wow.
And We knew that we had to pull him out of the daycare. Again, looking back on this, I probably could have sued them for the way they handled discharging my son with his disability.
Uh-huh.
But she brought that subject to mind, and she said she was basically willing to care for him for the rate that we had been paying Celebrate to care for our kids. But she would come to our house, and she would make sure his lunch was packed in the morning. And she would make sure that he got off the bus in the afternoon. And half days, she would be there for him. And days off, she would be there for him. And so she was a godsend.
Yeah, sounds like it.
She worked directly for us for, I think, 5 years, close to that.
Uh-huh.
And to this day, she's still very close to Mikey. She'll watch him on weekends for us when we go out of town. When we're doing something, we know that it's too much of a break from his routine and it's too much of a break from what's normal for him to allow him to be calm and serene.
Right. Wow. It's like you found like a guardian angel for Mikey.
Yeah, very much so. And one of her best friends also equally loves Mikey. And she's helped us out from time to time when Debbie wasn't available. And I will say that from the education system, overall, it's been a mediocre experience, but it's been spiked by a handful of really kind, caring, giving teachers and educators that we're friends with to this day because of how they approached trying to care for and support and educate our son.
So can you tell me a little bit more, like, what's it like being Mikey's dad? You know, like, dads usually think, like, Ray, my husband, you know, when he thinks about the boys, it's like, oh, like sports or, you know, just different things, like different expectations that he had. And my son, he is our oldest. I don't know, maybe for him also, it's like initially when you get that diagnosis, all these things kind of just, you start thinking about like what your ideas were before your son was born. And then when you get the diagnosis, it kind of start rethinking things.
Well, you certainly do. I would say that being Mikey's dad is interesting, to say the least. You never know what's going to catch his attention. Mm-hmm. And so I'll give you a great example. Mikey loves Guitar Hero, the video game.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't like to play it. He likes to watch me play it.
Interesting.
And he has a very specific set of songs that he likes to listen to. Now, for the audience, if you're seeing this video, you'll be surprised to learn this, but I'm a big metalhead. I went to a lot of heavy metal concerts in my younger days. And so when I got Guitar Hero, that's all the stuff I played. And those are all of Mikey's favorite songs.
How cool is that? So it's like you guys have connected through Guitar Hero.
Yes. Mikey has his own playlist on Spotify. Uh-huh. And when I show it to people, they're like, oh, he doesn't like that song. I'm like, he knows every word.
Wow.
Every single word.
Oh, my
And
gosh.
I mean, you know, like Cowboys from Hell by Pantera and Strutter by Kiss. And I mean, he likes some really eclectic songs.
Oh, my gosh. That's so cool. Well, I would say like with my son and my husband, they bond through when they play their video games. He's all excited now because now they can like play these like certain video games that they can enjoy together and stuff. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you guys like playing again?
Yeah, but Mikey doesn't interact per se. We've always joked around that he plays around the other children. He doesn't play with
them. Okay.
So he enjoys being around other kids. And if they're running around, he'll play around. But as far as playing a baseball game, something like that, mm-hmm. he doesn't get that concept. Mm-hmm. He enjoys watching it sometimes. Yeah. And Mikey, I guess as a byproduct of his autism, he's very symbol-driven. So symbols.
Oh, okay.
You know, pictures, logos, brands. Yeah, his favorite thing to do is he's got an Amazon Kindle. I think we're on his fifth or sixth one now. Not because he breaks them, just because they die. He has broken them, but they die.
Uh-huh.
But he takes pictures and he makes videos. And embarrassingly, his favorite thing when he was like 5 or 6 years old was to take pictures of beer labels.
Oh, really?
So, you know, to you, the unsuspecting friend, he'd look at Mikey's Kindle and it'd be Budweiser and Corona and Coors Light. People are like, what are you teaching your kid?
Yeah,
like,
right.
He likes logos. I can't control what logos he likes.
That's and funny.
So as a result, he loves NASCAR. He doesn't know a thing about NASCAR.
Uh-huh.
But NASCAR is covered in logos.
Right.
And so as a result, Disney Cars is one of his absolute favorite films. Because that's, you know, that's the Disney version of Budweiser and Coors Light.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's neat. Well, you had mentioned to me before that your son is currently on the LFI track. I've never heard of it. So can you explain what LFI stands for and a little bit about it?
Sure. Now, I don't know how it exists outside of Carroll County.
Okay.
But in Carroll County, it's LFI's Learning for Independence. So there were two decisions that were made. First, Mikey was in the autism program up until a year and a half ago. So through most of his school career, he was in an autism classroom. All the other students in that classroom were on the autism spectrum.
Oh, okay.
That was their disability. And the year before last, they recommended that we transition him into this Learning for Independence program that would help him a little more around day-to-day functionality. So now, in addition to that, at around the same time, we made the decision to move him off of the diploma track to move him on to the certificate of completion track.
Okay.
Because, you know, trying to grade him, he'd fail everything because he's a sophomore in high school this year.
Okay.
And most of his academics are still at a third or a fourth grade.
So in this program, they're teaching life skills then.
Yeah. So math is around, okay, if something costs $1.75 and you have $2, how much change will you get?
Okay, got it.
And you want to apply for a job, or you want to apply for a cell phone, or you want to get an apartment. Here's mm-hmm. the application. What information do you need to fill in and why?
Okay. And do you apply for it, or it's something that you, well, in your situation, in your county, then
it
you
was
transition.
Recommended by the educators.
Right, right. So what's the student to teacher ratio then?
It's still very small. His classroom, I think, has 7 students.
Oh,
and
okay.
There's 2 primary teachers. And in Mikey's case, he still has a one-on-one in his IEP. So he has a one-on-one in addition to the 2 teachers.
I see. Now, is this program, because you said he's in high school, or, you know, he's a sophomore. So does that extend? Can the program go beyond 18 years old, or?
We have been told that having him in the LFI program will increase the likelihood that he qualifies for the extension after senior year. Which I kind of chuckle at that, because anybody that wants to try and tell me my son doesn't qualify for that is going to have to come up with a pretty compelling argument.
Right, right, right. No, because I was just wondering if those services are already kind of part of his track. You know what I mean? Like in terms of that's the transition, because we talk about the transitioning, the transitional services and stuff. So preparing him for adulthood.
Yeah. And yeah. You can appreciate this, but preparing your child that's on the spectrum for adulthood means so many things to so many different people.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've met somebody with autism, you've met one person with autism. They
exactly.
truly are unique, like snowflakes. I had mentioned to you several people that I not only went to college with, but were roommates of mine, all have kids on the spectrum. And one of them is very high functioning. She's off to college this year.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is very low functioning. And she's actually living in a community home now because the burden on her parents was just too much.
Right.
And, you look at your perspective, you look at your situation and you think about, God, how do I get through this? Mm-hmm. People always say to me, you're so honest about your son. I'm like, I have to be.
Yeah.
If you don't laugh,
right.
you'll cry.
Right.
You have to be willing to talk about the good and the bad.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's funny. We've sort of talked about a lot of the messed up things in my son's life in the last 20 minutes or so. But on the flip side of that, Mikey is one of the happiest kids you'll ever meet. He always laughing, smiling. He is so good at self-entertaining. He has never once indicated to me that he was bored. If he's not playing with his toys or watching movies or creating movies of his own on the computer, he's got a little bit of hacker in him. He's done some amazing things.
Wow. Well, that's his superpower.
Yeah, I guess it is. he's starting to show real artistic talent. He can reproduce cartoons, with amazing, comparables as far as image to image. So we're starting to see some of those things come out about him. So
that's so cool.
Mikey will probably never have a job or live independently.
Mm-hmm.
But from a life fulfillment standpoint, I wouldn't mind that life. He's pretty darn fulfilled. He's pretty darn happy.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds like a great young man. Well, how do you think autism has changed you in terms of like relationships, your friendships? I mean, you mentioned like, well, you know my husband from college too. And when I told him that there are some of, I found out that some of your other friends have children with autism, he was actually really surprised. And, you know, that goes to say there, I think in Maryland, the statistics are now like 1 in 49 or something kids are diagnosed with ASD.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I think the last statistic I saw was it's 1 in 55 overall, but for boys, it's like 1 in 35. It spikes dramatically.
Yeah.
For boys. But here's what I'll say. When I first got involved in the community, you know, with my volunteer work, I remember it was 1 in 89. And it seemed like every year that went by, the number got a little tighter and a little tighter and a little tighter.
Uh-huh.
And it's one of those things like, I think the world now is aware of autism.
Yeah.
So that's step one.
Mm-hmm.
And now step two is they need to really get actively involved. I don't know if you're familiar with Biddy and Bo's down in Annapolis.
Oh, yes. I actually went there. I went because back in February, there's a Disabilities Day at the legislature.
Okay.
So I actually went. That was like my first time going to that. And then me and some other parent advocates, we went to that establishment. It was really cool.
Yeah. The original location is in Wilmington, North Carolina. And my wife and I both have family there.
Uh-huh.
And we've been going there for vacation for years. And so we visited the original Biddy and Bo's, you know, probably a dozen times. And it was nice to be able to take Mikey into an environment where he fit in,
mm-hmm.
largely.
You know, actually, before, can you describe to our listeners or tell our listeners about it? Because not everybody's sure. familiar about the
restaurant. If you've not been to Biddy and Bo's, change that. So Biddy and Bo's is literally, it's named after the two children of the founders, of her son and her daughter, they have Down syndrome. And she was thinking about, well, what's the legacy I leave for my children after I'm gone? And they decided to start a business where their children could have employment. And so most of the people that work at Biddy and Bo's, it's a coffee shop, so they serve coffee and mm-hmm. sell t-shirts and coffee mugs, and you can get your donut, and you can get your bagel, and you can even get an egg sandwich, and you know, basic breakfast kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But most of the employees there have some learning disability, some significant learning disability. And then there's several mentors that help them through the process. So there's a door greeter, and there's somebody that brings you up to the cash register, and there's somebody that'll bring you your coffee and bring you your food. There's somebody cooking the food in the background. So it's a paradigm shift. It's starting to open up that world.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more and more of those. You know, the more you look up stories like that, the better you feel. Because there's a little place here in Westminster that a man started a coffee grinding shop. So they grind their own coffee. And he started that just for his daughter. I can't remember the name, but I'll look it up so you can add it in the liner notes after.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, they sell bags of coffee. So they roast and bag their own coffee.
Oh, okay.
And the young lady that, you know, the father set that up for his daughter. Again, she has an intellectual disability,
mm-hmm.
and he wanted to leave something for her that would be a viable way to earn a living because other people weren't.
And it's very empowering for
yes.
the individual. You know, it makes them feel like, yes, they are contributing to their community. Like they have a purpose. As a parent, you're not just sitting with them in some clinical setting at a doctor's appointment or something. It's like, you know, you get to see the other side of them, you know,
and their
humanity, right?
So one of my Facebook friends has a daughter with autism, and she's pretty far on the spectrum as far as functionality. And she's a brilliantly talented artist. And I don't mean she's painting the Sistine Chapel, but she does these conceptual pieces that are absolutely gorgeous. And she posted something on Facebook the other day about trying to sell more of her paintings. I said, does she have a Facebook page? Does she have a website? I said, DM me if you want some help. So this Saturday, we're going to spend about an hour working through the logistics of getting a basic website set up, where just so she can sell her paintings, because you can amplify that. If you can get that out to the world.
Yeah.
You know, that people will buy that type of work because of the story behind it as much as the paint on the canvas.
Yes, I agree. That's so cool. And then, which brings me to my next question. Can you tell us about Pathfinders for Autism and how you got involved?
Yep. So the short answer to that is completely by accident. Right before my 40th birthday, I had seen an interview on TV of a grandmother who was running a marathon to raise money for her sick granddaughter. And I remember seeing that thinking, I can do that. Certainly I must be able to do that. And so it was called 40 Miles for Autism. The idea was I was going to run 40 miles, raise $40,000, lose 40 pounds, and turn 40. So that's where the whole point.
That's cool. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
I like the name.
Yeah. So I got some really good feedback about it. And one of my friends said to me, so who are you giving the money to? I hadn't thought about that. So I started researching different nonprofits here in Maryland, and Pathfinders for Autism popped up. And I reached out to their executive director, Rebecca Rienzi. We had a conversation. I said, look, I'm doing a fundraiser. You guys money. They were all too happy to help me market and promote. So I did, I had a t-shirt made that was, it was basically a man running in a puzzle piece. And I got a bunch of those printed up and I would sell those. And one of my fraternity brothers used to own a bar downtown called Bad Decisions. And he gave away all the proceeds that night to Pathfinders for Autism. And I did that at three or four other bars in Baltimore as well. And I was doing video blogs. I was, you know, chronicling my weight loss and all that. And the idea again was on my 40th birthday to run the 40 miles, you know, but that would sort of be the feather in the cap and cap off the program. So I ended up raising about $11,000. I got in a car accident, got a concussion. So that sort of,
oh my gosh.
Cut off the running, certainly not 40 miles, but I got to know the folks at Pathfinder. So they've been around just over 20 years. And the thing that I really liked about Pathfinders for Autism is they're all about supporting families in Maryland. So it was keeping the money local and it was supporting other families like mine. Mm-hmm. And so they support through educational events. They support through fun events. You know, probably our most well-known fun event is the National Aquarium. Every winter, we get the aquarium completely to ourselves. And every family that registers can bring everyone. Their children are on the spectrum, their neurotypicals, brothers, sisters, mom, dad. They can all go out for a night.
Oh, cool.
Be at the aquarium and not worry about your kid having a tantrum or having a stim or any of those things. And so we do a lot of fun stuff like that. We do the zoo run in Baltimore every year. And that is, you know, there are some hardcore people that love doing a 5K or a 10K and winning that medal. But so many of the people that come out, they just want to get the shirt. They want to see the they want to see the zoo with their family and have some ice cream. And so it's one of our most popular events, and that's a fundraiser as well as a friendraiser. So we do a lot of community good with that event. So we do a lot of stuff like that. I think perhaps the most meaningful thing that we put a lot of our money raised towards is we're educating first responders. So we are traveling the state now, not now. Now we're zooming the state.
Right.
But we're talking to police cadets, we're talking to nurses, we're talking to doctors, we're talking to firefighters. And I don't mean, when I say we, I don't mean me. We actually have a fantastic team of trainers And we actually have several self-advocates, so people on the autism spectrum that go around to these training seminars, and they teach these first responders, this is what to look for to identify if somebody could potentially be on the autism spectrum.
Oh, okay.
If you believe that they are on the spectrum, here are some keys to help you effectively communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine reached out to me a couple weeks ago and said that one of his customers is a business owner in Baltimore, and they have an employee on the autism spectrum who does good work, but they're having a real communication issue. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, tell them to call the Pathfinder's office, ask to speak to Trish or to Neil. There are two primary trainers, and tell them what's going on. I'm sure they'll be happy to help. And sure enough, guy called, spoke to Neil. Neil came to the office, gave him some coaching on how to interact with this person on the autism spectrum, and just did a world of good.
Wow. And
if I think that is, you know, dotting the I and crossing the T for me for the good work that Pathfinders does here and there.
That is so cool. Yeah, I mean, the listeners, there's a lot of resources for parents and autistic individuals on their website, so you can check that out. So Neil, 2 years ago, I did some research, and 2 years ago, it was estimated that about 550,000 kids with ASD in the United States would be transitioning into adulthood over the next decade. Mm-hmm. And that about 45% of them would be enrolling in a university, college, or technical vocational school in the coming years.
That's encouraging.
Really, yeah, yeah, right? Right? And I met you through my husband. You guys are fraternity brothers. And he tells me that you're the LinkedIn guru. And so
I call myself a LinkedIn nerd, but I'll take guru.
Well, my ASD son is currently a sophomore in college. Can you talk to us about how a college student could get maximum use out of LinkedIn to attract potential employers for internship or job opportunities?
Absolutely. There's a couple of big keys when it comes to developing your LinkedIn profile. And the first is you want to create your profile for the job that you want, not necessarily the job that you have. So if you look at most college students' LinkedIn profile, it says they're a college at UMBC. They're a student at UMBC, or they're a mm-hmm. student at McDaniel College, or they're a student at Johns Hopkins University. Nobody hires students.
True.
What they hire are the skills that you acquire while being a student.
Ah, okay.
So if you think about it from that perspective, the overwhelming majority of people that go to college go to earn a specific degree.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's engineering. Maybe it's nursing. Maybe it's accounting. But you're going, maybe you want to be a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So think about it from that perspective. Instead of writing student at UMBC, what are the top 5 or 10 keywords relevant to your skills?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're an educator, what goes into that? Are you going to specialize in special education? Are you going to specialize in art? Are you going to specialize in history? Are you going to specialize in art history?
Mm-hmm.
But think about that from that perspective. If you're an engineer, how many engineer types are there? My goodness, there's computer engineering, there's civil engineering, there's biomedical. I mean, the list goes on and on.
Right.
So an engineer is not just an engineer. So that word, engineer, that's important. That's a key word. But which engineer do you want to be? Are there 2 or 3 engineers that uh-huh. your skills lend towards? Have you picked up very specific skills along the way?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the other big key. And then having engagement. And what I mean by that is like people's posts, share people's posts, and give thoughtful commentary on those posts. That's the most important piece. This is your chance to tell the world that you understand what you're talking about.
Well, wait, hold on. I'm going to stop you right there. So when you talk about engaging in people's posts, I mean, mm-hmm. What I mean, I'm not really on LinkedIn, so sure. And I know my son isn't really on LinkedIn at all because he hasn't even really thought about sure. all that stuff. So, like for a college student, what do you mean when you know, engaging in thoughtful or and being thoughtful on posts?
Sure. So let's use the accounting example. Let's say your son's going to be an accountant. He's going mm-hmm. to school for a degree in finance. There are plenty of people that post articles, that post polls, that post questions around that industry to give thoughtful feedback on their content.
Oh, okay.
Show that you understand the industry, you understand what it's about, and that you can be valuable to others.
Okay. Got it. Yeah, because I remember he had to, one of his assignments was to create a profile. And that was because he's doing information systems right now. And sure. he said, oh, yeah, I have to create a LinkedIn profile. I'm like, okay. I'm like, I guess you could watch a YouTube video and, and like see what they say. But yeah, all the stuff that you say, it makes sense. And I didn't even know, I didn't realize about, you know, engaging on with posts and, you know, yeah. I don't know how many people think about, and especially college students, you know, think about doing that.
So stuff. That's a good point. When I speak at a lot of colleges about this, I've spoken at UMBC a number of times, Towson, Hopkins, and I speak to rising seniors, people getting ready to graduate.
Mm-hmm.
And when I stand in front of them, the first thing I say, okay, you're all looking at me going, this guy's a salesman. I'm not a salesman. What is he going to teach me? And I tell them, well, statistically, 30% of you will end up in sales at one point in your life, whether you like it or not. I didn't go to college for a sales degree. I can guarantee you that. Uh-huh. My degree is English literature.
Oh, my gosh.
Bit of a departure.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I said, well, how many of you want to own your own business? And then for that one, I'll get more hands to go.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, I hate to break it to you. That's sales. If you're going to own your own business, you're selling somebody to buy you or buy the product that you have created.
Right, right.
So the important thing about using LinkedIn is to adopt the sales mentality. Mm. Even the job interview process is almost identical to the sales process. So mm-hmm. you think about it. In the sales world, I'm bugging people, and that's probably the most polite way to I'm bugging people that have never met me before to agree to meet with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they agree to meet with me, I'm listening to what their needs are. And then my job is to persuade them as to why I'm the person that can fill their needs.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I do that right, then they sign a contract and I have a new customer.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're looking for a job, you're bugging people that have never met you before.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to get them to meet you for an interview. When you get into the interview, your job is to now persuade them how your skills match that job description so that you can fulfill a need for them.
Right.
And then if you do a good job of that, then they offer you the job and you now have a way to earn a living.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same process. It's just framed different.
Mm-hmm.
And most people don't think about it that way. And very candidly, in sales, good salespeople know how to leverage existing relationships. And in the job market, you leverage existing relationships. So you can't know too many people.
Mm-hmm.
I tell my students all the time, connect with your mom, your dad, your aunts, your uncles. On LinkedIn, because you never know who they know that might be your next employer.
Oh, right, right. That makes sense.
You know, you're a kind mother. I know you want your son to succeed. And you might not think about this guy, Tim, in your LinkedIn network, who you haven't talked to in 6 years, but you have a good relationship with, and your son would be a great fit for a role at his company. And you didn't think about it because you didn't put the pieces together. It'll make you better. It's just that's human nature.
Mm-hmm.
But if your son comes to you and says, hey, mom, I notice you're connected to this guy, Tim, on LinkedIn, and he has a job opening for me. Would you mind introducing him? Well, the likelihood that your son's going to get that interview now goes up significantly. Mm-hmm. And the interview is much less adversarial. It's a much easier environment. And the likelihood that he can get the job goes up tremendously. Mm-hmm. People want to hire people that they feel are in their sphere of influence. That's why 70% of jobs never get published.
Hmm.
You know, you think about your own work experiences. Whenever there's a role in the office, the first thing they do is they ask the rest of the staff, hey, do you know anybody that could take this role?
Yeah, that's true. Because I think a lot of jobs, it's like word of mouth. Like, do you know somebody? And I, you know, so I guess, you know, LinkedIn is kind of like that.
It amplifies it.
It amplifies it, right.
Yeah. You're borrowing and leveraging the trust of others to amplify your opportunity.
Okay. So is there, like, when you were talking about the profile, is there a profile that, you know, do you not want to be too wordy or?
Yeah, there are a few things that you want to pay attention to. You certainly want to have a professional photo.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't afford to have a professional photographer take a photo of you, at least choose a clean background and a well-lit room. Make sure you're wearing professional clothing. And make sure somebody else takes the picture of you. Selfies are not allowed. And make sure you're smiling. One of the first comments I get from people whenever they look at my LinkedIn profile is, you seem happy. Mm-hmm. Well, people like to deal with happy people. They don't like to deal with grumpy people.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to that, you're right. In many cases, less is more. You want a full profile. You want a complete profile. Because LinkedIn works like a search engine. It works like Google. So the more pieces you have filled in,
mm-hmm.
the better you are. But, you know, in the about me section where you get to write a little paragraph about who you are and what you do, I see people write the worst marketing fluff. Mike Sheila is a seasoned dynamic professional with over 20 years of experience of driving value for his key stakeholders. What does that say?
Right.
It's fluff.
Right.
So think about it from the other person's seat. You know, how are you valuable to them? What are your skills? And just because you don't have a lot of experience doesn't mean you don't have any experience. Classroom time is valuable.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it begins. That's where you nurture. That's where you plant the seed.
Mm-hmm.
Don't underestimate your value. Because if you get to the interview stage, guess what? You're there because you legitimately could do this job. Mm-hmm. It's less about your skills at that point, and it's more about how you interact with that person on the other side.
Well, I'm glad you say that because I was just talking to another ASD mom, and she has a couple of kids in college right now. And we talk about, you know, internships and like, you know, are the future. And the thing is that when you're applying, you think, oh gosh, how's he going to measure up with the other applicants? Because he has, you know, here's a kid, he already has ASD, he's focusing on school. He doesn't really, you know, have time to like carry a part-time job as maybe like a neurotypical kid. Do you know what I mean? It's just, they already are doing so much to get through school. Yeah. So it's almost like, okay, they're kind of at a disadvantage, would you say?
I will say that the deck is not in their favor, but that doesn't mean that they can't get a lucky hand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's why having these relationships matters so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll drop everything I'm doing and help another autism parent.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know how hard this is.
Yeah,
and
that's how
I
feel.
Things, I'm relatively lucky. Mikey is fairly low maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he has his things that drive me bananas, but generally speaking, he's a fairly low maintenance kid. I have to be around him all the time. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, I have friends that have kids on the spectrum that are 10 times harder to manage and care for. Not because they're bad people, just because their situation is hard.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. There's just, as an ASD parent. Yeah, exactly. And then not to even mention, you know, that just the emotional stress, the mental stress, financial stress, it's a lot. And I think that's why as autism parents, we a lot of us end up becoming parent advocates because we know how hard it is. And, you know, we want to help those who are younger parents or maybe just the same age as our kids, but help them so that things are a little bit easier because we know how hard it can be.
Yeah, if I can do one thing to make the life of another autism parent better, then I've made a dent in the universe.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like you're really doing your part with like with your fundraiser and, I mean, helping kids, you know, doing these lectures that you said that at the colleges to help empower people.
Yeah, I have a lot of fun with that stuff too.
So how can our listeners find you and support you?
Well, there's a few ways. Once you know how to spell my last name, S-H-E-L-A-H, I'm very Googleable. So naturally, I have a profile on LinkedIn. You can follow me on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. I have a website, MikeSheila.com. I have my Facebook business page, Mike Sheila Consulting. For my day job, you can go to Advantage Industries, which is GetAdvantage.com. For Pathfinders for Autism, that's pathfindersforautism.org. They're on all the socials. So if you're a Facebook fan, follow their Facebook page. If you're on Instagram, follow their Instagram page. If you're a Twitter page, tweet them. They got a LinkedIn business page. So now, no matter how you want to connect with me, whether it's about my professional work, whether it's about what I do in LinkedIn, whether it's what I do in the autism community, I make myself very accessible, intentionally.
Well, what words of wisdom would you like to share with us, and especially to the parents who are just starting their autism journey?
My wife and I have a couple of sayings that I don't think a day's gone by that we haven't said one, if not both of them. Mm-hmm. The first is, if you don't laugh, you'll cry. This is not an easy road. And you know, all the Hallmark cards about, oh, a child with a disability is a blessing. No, I don't love my son any less, mm-hmm. but it's hard.
Yeah.
So have a sense of humor about it. I think some of my favorite people in the autism community, they have the most outrageous kind of snarky, sarcastic sense of humor about the world and how it spins around us. Because laughter cures a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And if you probably can appreciate this, when you have more than one child, you have a neurotypical and you have someone on the spectrum, you got to divide and conquer.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm taking Mikey and my wife takes Taylor today. There are times that's how it goes. And you know, I haven't spoken about Mikey's sister. He has an older sister. She's a freshman in college right now. And she's the best big sister we could have asked for. As far as, you know, her maturity and her willingness to help with us. And we've told her repeatedly, you know, Mikey is your brother. He's not your responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to go out of our way to allow you to have your life. So, you know, she was a senior on the field hockey team and she was in theater and she was doing after school activities and she got to be a Girl Scout,
mm-hmm.
and you name it. We went out of our way to assure that she had as regular a life as possible.
And I think that's great because I've spoken to siblings as well. And I think of one of my friends and she's a sibling of an ASD individual. And I mean, she felt like, you know, her parents growing up, they didn't really get her involved with her sister's care. And then as they got older, it became all of a sudden like her responsibility. So it was like, not like it to be a negative thing because she loves her sister, right? But it's hard. It's like almost like, oh my gosh, now the burden is on me. And so, you know, it really does change things. You know, when she was growing up, like where she would go to college. And I think maybe in the background, she kind of just thought that I can't be, or, you know, I shouldn't dream of things that I want because I have to be there for my sibling. Yeah.
And that's, you know, on the one hand, I give her kudos for thinking that way. Mm-hmm. That she has, you know, that because that's just showing love and caring, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's where that comes from.
Yeah.
It comes from a good place. But yeah, we knew early on that we couldn't make that. And as a result, Taylor has been great. You know, when she was in high school, she got Mikey off the bus for us. And mm-hmm. you know, she really helped fill a gap for a couple of years there that allowed my wife and I to keep working full time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that was largely her job. We said, look, we'll pay you mm-hmm. because you can't have a job based on what we're asking you to do. And so it allowed her to have spending money, and it allowed her to, you know, firsthand understand what goes on with
mm-hmm.
you know, because there were times that she had to deal with tough situations.
Mm-hmm.
I would be sitting at my desk and I'd see my cell phone ring and it would say Taylor, and I go, hey sweetie, what's up? And she would have something going on that she hadn't dealt with before. So for her, it was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, okay, kiddo, here's what you got to do. And she would do it, and crisis averted. So it was a good learning experience for her. And you know, I mentioned she's a freshman right now at High Point University. And so she's going through the Sorority Rush program right now.
Okay.
And she told us which sorority she's interested in. And she said, well, I like this one because of their involvement in the community. Like, that was her first reaction.
Wow.
Is, I want to be involved in the community.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to just join a group. I want to join a cause. I want to join a purpose. And I tell people all the time, I don't know how my kid turned out as good as she did. She's smart. She cares. She wants to contribute to the world. So, yeah.
She learned from her brother.
Yeah. Yeah, he probably served as a model in some very unexpected and unintentional. Yeah.
Well, that concludes our podcast for today. Thank you, Mike, for sharing your story and knowledge to help educate and empower us. We wish you and your family all the very best. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. Stay well, and I will talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Autism Mom MD podcast. If you like what you heard, please tell a friend, spread the word, and leave a review on iTunes. For any questions, comments, or suggestions for topics you'd like to hear on the podcast, please join our Facebook group, Autism Mom MD, or visit us on the web at www.autismmommd.com.